Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Duel Machine. I am Andy Hotbody Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Nicky Delaney, so what?
Welcome along another Tune Machine episode, the random chart-generating blob has done its work and is about to reveal the chart that we're about to look at. So here we go. Random blob, use your gob. Tell us how to do our job.
12th of November, 1995.
Ooh, at last.
At last,
Tom. We hit the most glorious era in the history of mankind, 1995. I mean, we're not quite into Euro 96 yet, but we're certainly in the build-up.
We're on the cusp. I mean, you're going to look at this chart, surely you're going to think it's going to be riddled, near addled with Britpop.
Mm, that's what you'd
from
think.
From 40 down to 1, that's what you'd think. We're going to start off doing the countdown, as we always do. So we'll find out just then.
I tell you what, you can almost smell the caffres, can't you? You can always taste the caffres, smell the Charlie.
Yeah, you can.
And we'll come hear John Major's words echoing around in your nut.
Oh, the Corns hotline. Back to basics. All of that. With Tony Blair coming up on the reels. Right, here we go. Here's the top 40 then. Number 40, it's a new entry for Sunscreen with Exodus.
At number 39, down 8 places, it's Luther Vandross with Power of Love / Love Power. Make your mind up, mate.
A lot of love, a lot of power. Down 5 at 38, it's Mariah Carey with Fantasy.
Number 37, it's a new entry for Sacred Spirit with Wishes of Happiness and Prosperity. Then there's a third title in brackets, but there literally is not enough room on the screen for me to read it.
Something to think about there in future, Sacred Spirit. Keep an eye on your admin. New in at 36, it's Frankie Knuckles featuring a diva with What Do You Want From Me?
For fuck's sake.
Needy.
At 35, down 8 places, it's Josh Wink with Higher State of Consciousness.
I think that's something we've got all hope to attain over the Christmas period coming up. In at 34, it's Guru and Feel the Music.
At number 33, it's old Snake Hips himself, Elvis Presley, the king, as far as I'm concerned, forever. I don't care if he's dead, with the 12th of Never.
Always in our hearts, the king of fried banana sandwiches. Down 10 at 32, it's Cher with Walking in Memphis.
New in at 31, it's Groove Theory with Tell Me.
He's still the king of pop, but he's down 5 at 30. It's Michael Jackson with You Are Not Alone.
At 29, down 10 places, it's the TLC girls with Digging On You. Digging with an apostrophe, not with a G. Disgraceful.
Someone told me the other day what TLC stands for, and I'll say this, I can't repeat it on the radio. Down 12 at 28, UB40, Until My Dying Day.
At 27, it's Shaggy with Boombastic.
Straight in at number 26, it's Therapy with Diane.
At number 25, it's Eternal. The Power of a Woman.
Down 11 at 24, Roughneck. He's featuring Yavan, and it's Everybody Be Somebody.
You in at 23? It's clock within the house. I've got a clock in my house, mate, and it's invaluable.
Down 8 at number 22, Smokey, featuring Roy Chubby Brown, and I can't read the title of it.
At number 21, it's the Rolling Stones with Bob Dylan's classic, Like a Rolling Stone.
I see what they've done there.
Pick the bones out of that one.
Standing still at number 20, Ace of Base with Lucky Love.
New in at 19, Ding Dong, who's that? It's the Pizza Man with Happiness. I know my Pizza Man always delivers happiness in the form of a large Hawaiian and a 1.5 litre bottle of Pepsi Max.
Extra pineapple on that for me, please. Our brand new in at number 18, it's the beautiful South, those miserable Northerners with Pretenders to the Throne.
At number 17, new in, it's Alex Party with Wrap Me Up.
Oh, sounds like he's a present at his own party. Straight in at number 16, this guy could be the new Elvis Presley, I feel. Sean Maguire with You to Me Are Everything.
Lovely looking young man with fantastic, sure impeccable manners. At number 15, it's Saint Etienne with He's on the Phone. Who's on the phone? I guess we'll never know.
Nope. Down four places at number 14, it's Def Leppard, When Love and Hate Collide. Simple as that.
Nasty. I've seen that happen before and it's unpleasant.
It can happen.
Can make a
nasty mess.
Usually
ends 13, up in the law courts.
At number 13, down by, it was very similar to the breakup of me and my wife. She loved me and I hated her. Great stuff.
Never gets old. Never gets old.
13, down four places, it's Simply Red with Fairground.
Brand new in at number 12, it's Enya. The smooth, smooth sounds of Enya. This one's called Anywhere Is.
So relaxing. New in at number 11, it's Whitney Houston, a lovely young lady with the song Exhale, brackets, Shoop Shoop, whatever that bloody means.
Well, straight in at 10, Tina Turner with the theme tune to the brand new James Bond film, GoldenEye.
At number 9, it's Meat Loaf, who claims, I'd lie for you, brackets, and that's the truth. Clever bit of a wordplay there.
Very confusing there, Mr. Loaf. I'd like to question you further about that, but not right now, because down 4 at 8 places, it's Queen, led by the great dead Freddie Mercury, and this is called Heaven for Everyone. Perhaps he's singing from heaven, who knows?
Being dead won't stop our Freddie. Number 7, new in. It's the Happy Clappers with I Believe.
Down one place at number 6, East 17. They're talking about Thunder.
Number 5, Madonna with You'll See.
Will we? I hope so. What's she going to show us? I hope it's a
you
tits.
Never know with her. Volatile creature. I got that book 6, mate. It was absolutely mind-blowing.
Yep. I've got 5 copies, one for each room in the house. Up 2 places at number 4, Everything But the Girl. They're missing.
At number 3, it's horrible long-haired louts from the North Country, Oasis with Wonderwall.
They should ban them like they banned the Sex Pistols. Disgusting.
Disgusting.
Up one place at number 2, it's Coolio. He's featuring LV on his song Gangster's Paradise. I think that's how they say it in the rap world.
And at number 1, thank God that some decency still exists in this world. It's those lovely chaps, Robson and Jerome, out of the programme about soldiers, trained killers, with I Believe, it's a double A-side, mate, I Believe on one side, Up on the Roof on the other. Can't say fairer than that.
Hey, even trained killers are allowed to relax and sing a few songs of an evening once they've done a bit of stabbing and maiming. Great stuff, great chart. Thanks, mate.
What there a chart. Is. Well, it's interesting because definitely November 95, you would think that. In fact, I remember I used to make my end of year singles of the year cassette, yeah? Mm. And I'd been doing it for years. And I always drew the cover. I would do a little design for the cover. Right.
Would you use your coloured pencils?
I would get all my best pencils out. Mum, you know it's time for me to do my end of year mixtape. You shall have to give me some money to go to our price to buy all the singles that I want to put on the tape that I don't already own. If not, it won't be a fair reflection of what actually happened in the musical landscape in this year when historians discover it.
The historians will be confused.
We can't
Do you
that,
want to deprive mother? History of my taste in music?
I made
on the cassette format, which will certainly live forever.
I made this cassette single, and I have particularly vivid memories of making the 95 cassette, and I drew on the cover of it. You'll mock me for this, but at the time, it felt apropos. Now it just feels really corny. But what I drew for this, I tried to make every year, and I reckon I've probably been doing this since I was about 13 or something.
Right.
By 95, I would have been 20. And I would try to make the cover design in some way relevant to the year. And this particular year, the cover was simply a target, you know, like an RAF style, very Britpop target. Because I thought,
that's the pattern that sums up the Britpop movement that's so prevalent now, Mother.
Do you understand? No, I thought you wouldn't.
You stupid woman. Fogey. You're still listening to Cliff Richard, you make me sick. Whereas I am mad for it. Do you even know what that means? Of course you don't. Mad for it, that's me.
So I...
Myself and some of my university friends are going to go to Manchester. We're putting a bus on.
And we're buying enormous coats. Because that's what's fashionable to wear in Manchester. And you'll have to give me the money, Mother. You'll have to do extra cleaning shifts. But I need to buy a huge anorak.
We're going to invest in the comfort market. No, I don't know what it is either.
I did a target.
Yeah, your cassette, yeah.
And that's what I think of when I think this year. I think, it was the Britpop year. But in actual fact, this chart, obviously I love it just on the fact it's from the mid-90s, which just makes me feel happy. But it's, there's probably only in the whole top 40 that we just went through, there is one song out of 40 it falls into the Britpop category, which of course is Wonderwall by Oasis. But there is bloody hell, people remember that era for one particular genre, right? But what a huge array of genres there are, what an eclectic chart, and also so much good stuff. But just not looking, what you would automatically expect.
I'm looking for the Britpop to see where it's gone. There's a few. There's loads of Oasis singles down the lower reaches of the 100 that we've got access to here. Pretty much all of them are down between 80 and 100. But then we've got Echo Belly are there as well. They just dropped out of the charts. King of the Curb. Misshapen Sorted for Reason Wiz had dropped out. That's at number 60. Wanna Die's, McCormick and Butler, kind of Stone Roses, all in that sort of genre.
I think 96 was an even bigger year for it. But certainly 94,
they might be gearing up for the Christmas number one. There might have been a few singles.
94, 95 and 96 were the years where it was big. And then after that, by 97, it was kind of over.
Yeah, they all just got on the fucking gack and it all went tits up, didn't it? But it's a chart of mixed emotions for me, this, because I was still at Our Price. This was a year before I left Our Price, and the Robson and Jerome phenomenon did my fucking nut in.
Oh, I'm not surprised,
they
mate.
Fuck me. Those singles sold like hotcakes. I mean, they were number one singles anyway, because... like you said, it was two killers chilling out and making some nice old songs. But
in between portraying figures on a part of one of Margaret Thatcher's government-backed death squads in Northern Ireland. And they would just record classic songs.
But you've got the additional attraction of Robson Green being a Geordie. So I was working in Washington in Tyne-on-Wear, which is kind of halfway between Sunderland and Newcastle. So it was just fucking catnip for people.
Right,
there.
Give us one of them fucking records by
Robson Green.
The lad Robson. He's a fucking cunt. He's one of our own.
Oh, fact,
give us half a dozen.
He started out in the casualty. He was just a porter in the hospital. No, he's a soldier. Oh, who knows where he can go next?
He's going all the way to fucking Hollywood, mate. He's going to be bigger than Jimmy Nail.
Oh, his next thing he'll do will probably be a spaceman. But Fucking hell. And the Soldier videos, because it wasn't DVDs then, whenever they'd release the new Soldier VHS, and they'd release them in like installments that have like fucking four episodes on each one. So it'd be like fucking series four, Soldier. Volume two.
I've never seen an episode of the stupid fucking programme in my life.
Either. No.
Sort of thing my mum would watch. My mum would have definitely fancied them. But like I've said before, my mum basically fancied any male who was on television.
Right. Well,
pretty much. You'd just be like, you can't really mention anyone without going, I thought he was quite dishy.
Dishy, yeah.
But like Robson and Jerome would have been, yeah, totally. I don't know, maybe would she have bought it? I tell you what, bit of a Cosmos moment though, because up on the roof, which I think was originally The Drifters, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know who wrote that? Carole King. And the reason I have recall on that is because only this morning, we're recording this on the 12th of February, there was an article in The Guardian, a paper that I take. I don't
yes,
take
I still
yours.
Take The Guardian. What of it?
I looked on the website and there was a thing about 50th anniversary of her famous album, Tapestry, which is a great record. And it was all different singers paying tribute to it. And someone, I can't remember who, one of them was going on about the lyrics to Up on the Roof and how it's some of the greatest, like, lyrical phrasing. And I was thinking, yeah, sort of bit shit, that song, though. But then I thought, but then again, I'm surprised I think that because Carole King is one of the few songwriters in the history of pop and rock and roll who sort of, like, only wrote good songs. Like, she couldn't write a bad one. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
She put it in the bin.
She said,
"I never got to hear it."
Trust me, I fucking tried writing a shit song just for a laugh. See if I can do it. Can't fucking do it. Not possible, mate. Every time I fucking try, I end up writing something like, "Will you still love me tomorrow?" Fucking banger. But then I realised now, weirdly, that song was in my head because it's a sort of an irritating song that will drift around your head once it's there. And that was only this morning I read that article. And then we choose this chart at random and it's at number one. And I realised probably the reason I have negative thoughts about it is that although I know it was originally by the Drifters, it's fucking Robson and Jerome singing it, a pair of cunts.
Yeah.
Jalapeño.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Jalapeño.
Well, I mean, you know, that era of when the Drifters did it is riddled with fucking brilliant classic songs. So it's not a classic, Up on the Roof. It's there.
No. There were more talking. This person in the interview was going on about the lyrics, saying how the lyrics were so kind of universal. You get away from the bustling crowd and all my worries and fears drift away. Something like that. I can't remember.
Well, it's the prototype anthem for dads on roofs, isn't it? Get away from all my worries, get up on the roof.
That's right. You're totally right. That is exactly why dads are always finding excuses to go up on roofs. Because they'll never say, I'm going up on the roof just for a fucking relax and a fag.
Yeah.
They'll always go, I've got to go up and look at a pointing, right? Or something like that.
And if there's any role models for dads, it's Robson and Jerome, isn't it? Killing machines with a softer side. Dads love that sort of thing.
Yeah, so in many ways, I guess it launched a sort of a new perspective on how to dad Robson and
Jerome. Yeah, this
launched
the dad on the roof phenomenon that we've covered on this podcast at great length. So we're criticising Robson and Jerome. Maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we should tip our hats to them instead.
Didn't they break records at the time for records? That's something really depressing. And that, like, people will always look back and go, oh, yeah, the mid-90s, there's so much great music. But they forget. It's a bit like when people always trot out other sort of pop facts, like the way that Engelbert Humperdinck beat Strawberry Fields to number one, right? And it's a similar thing, like we become obsessed with it. Like we've done years that people would have associated with punk music, and there might have been two punk records in the whole top 40. Yeah. So it's not that charts are dominated by particular acts. It's just that those acts maybe get more press coverage or just seem like to define the way that young people are living. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think that Robson Jerome was selling record numbers.
Oh, it was. I mean, it was insane in our price in Washington. It was lunch hour was insane because you just get, it was all women that were coming in, middle-aged women coming from wherever the fuck they worked, in the shops, offices, wherever, from the DSS that was based across the road. They were coming in their droves.
Do you want me to get your sandwich? No, I'm going out for my lunch today. Oh, you don't usually go out for lunch. You usually bring something in. Aye, but I've got to get up to our price, haven't I? Got to get me fucking Robson on.
We'll just have a fucking pile of them. We'll have 50 copies coming in twice a day.
Just put them by the counter so you don't have to go out the back.
They'd be queuing up and I'd be like, yeah, Robson and Jerome, is it? Yeah, okay, there you go, $3.99. Thank you very much. Twat. Fucking, I'm like, this is not what I got into working in a fucking record shop. I want to stand here and look enigmatic and play the new fucking Andrew Weatherall remix.
Yeah, you wanted to have gone down that. Didn't you ever try and go down the road to one of the trendy independent record shops that you no doubt bought your own records from and tried to get a gig there? They would have paid shit, wouldn't they?
The pay was shit, yeah. What do we work for them cunts for? Yeah.
And there was no management, because you were on the management scheme at one point, weren't you? Hadn't you been earmarked for the top?
I was a senior sales assistant at the time, which gave me certain responsibilities, cashing up, things like that. Passing on messages. I used to get a message from head office, and this is before the days of emails and stuff, so there was like a chain thing. So a message would come from head office and it would be passed on by phone, and you'd have to, the person in the shop before you in the chain would read it out.
Wow.
And it would be like, here's the price changes for this weekend, and you'd have to write them out very carefully and then ring the next shop in the chain and tell them, like a Chinese whisper
fucking
thing.
Hell. What if you forgot or someone just didn't fucking do it or didn't answer the phone? Everything could collapse.
Fucking chain would collapse, yeah.
Sackable offence, breaking the chain, presumably.
Well, this is why only the senior sales assistants and above could do that, because, you know, we had to be responsible.
Yeah.
Great times in the world of retail.
So, but yeah, round at fucking, you know, Black Flag Records or whatever it was called, you know, where you went to get all your Fall albums and stuff like that, they would have not had any management training opportunities at all, would they?
They could barely dress themselves, Sam, to be honest.
Yeah. You could have been a big fish in a small pond, though, because if you'd gone in and brought all your corporate know-how, the processes and efficiencies of what was known as Big Vinyl, right, which is what Our Price was part of, you could have turned those record shops around. You could have been the main man.
I could have. I think they would have rebuffed me and my corporate ways.
You'd have lied on your CV.
It would. I mean, some of them would have survived a lot longer than they did. The one round the corner from Our Price in Washington was Volume Records, which was a great shop, and I loved it, and I bought stuff from there. But I bought most of my stuff from Our Price because I could order anything in and then get staff discount. So
just order
it. Go to Volume.
Yeah. If you'd gone around there, they would have said, you'd have had to leave Our Price off of your CV, and then they'd have said, I can't help but notice there's a big gaping hole on your CV here. Where have you been for the last 3 years, and why haven't you got any record shop experience? And you'd have to say, I've actually been in New York working in a record shop there.
Yeah.
Which burnt down, and that's why I'm back again with all my American experience. It was that cool that it didn't have a name or a address. That's how cool and underground it was.
That's where I've worked.
If you need, well, we're going to need a reference, like. And you go, okay, here's a fucking reference. You just write down a really long made up number. And they go, well, I'm not calling that. Sounds a bit expensive. I'll have to take your word for it.
And then let anyway, loose on the filing system.
That's what you might have done. But at number two, I mean, we're not just go for it in order, but I would say the first four records on this list are worth like mentioning. Gangster's Paradise. That was definitely on my end of year cassette.
was it?
And it is a fucking really good song. It's just a good song, mate. I mean, I know it's like Stevie Wonder, but actually he's taken, see, it's not really a cover because he's taken Pastime Paradise and he's done his own rapping over it. And it, but it's really good. I mean, it's silly. It's sort of pop hip hop, but it's fucking good.
Yeah, I wasn't massively into it, I've got to say, but
I love it.
I was into Wu-Tang Clan by that point. Yes. You see, 95, and I thought Coolio was for the children.
Yeah, well, it is. It's pop hip hop, but
yeah,
I liked it anyway. I thought it was really good. Power and the money, money and the power.
Yeah, now think about it.
I don't like
minute
to
after minute,
you,
hour after hour.
I don't like to trigger you by talking about Oasis because they're one of your trigger bands. But Wonderwall was a good song and they were, despite everything we've said, so preeminent in this era. In fact, I seem to remember that he's not in this chart, but Mike Flowers popped. He did a sort of a silly cover version and they were both in like the top 10 at the same time. I in fact think that he might have got to number one before them. I'll have to check that. But he was like a sort of a kind of a, what do you call it, a parody 60s, what do you call those kind of singers, lounge singer sort of thing.
That must have come out a month or so after this, because that came out just before Christmas, and that went in at number two. I seem to recall. Didn't get a number one, thankfully.
They were in a race against each other for Christmas number one. I don't think either of them made it.
No. Oasis had dropped away by then and Mike Flowers came along. But this is the era of Chris Evans' Radio 1 breakfast show.
Yeah.
That was what launched Mike Flowers' pops to the topmost of the popmost.
What, because he kept playing it, did he?
Yeah. Evans made that one and I fucking hated that. I like Wonderwall. I don't think What's the Story, Morning Glory is a great album. I love the first Oasis album. I thought that was brilliant. I thought What's the Story, Morning Glory was all right. Some good songs on it, some rubbish.
Mm.
It had the whiff of cocaine about it. A
little bit. And then with the third album, afterwards, which I thought signalled the end of Britpop officially, it was like an extension of What's the Story, Morning Glory. It took a bit of what we'd seen hints of on What's the Story, Morning Glory, like the song What's the Story, Morning Glory, which was very like there was a huge, over-elaborate kind of intro and it sort of verged on the operatic. And it was like, they're showing hints of self-indulgence here. And then by the time it got to the third album, the whole thing was just fucking...
Well, the third album had All Around the World on it, didn't it? The 10-minute fucking song, which they'd been talking about for a while and they hadn't released it and said, this is going to be our masterpiece.
Yeah, because he kept going on, Noel Gallagher kept going on about that. I wrote it when I was on a building site, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And I also remember them saying... It's so good that the first time I played it to Bonehead, he cried. And I was like, whoa, that fella Bonehead doesn't look like he cries easy. I mean, his name's Bonehead. That's not the name of a man who's crying all over the place, you know.
It's that, what's that classic phrase? You can't get tears out of a bone.
Yeah, you know what precisely. I mean? So... But you can out of him if you play him all around the world. So I must say, I was thinking... Because they've been talking about it for so long and then kept saying that, but made Bonehead cry. Made Bonehead cry. Right. They fucking... When it came out, I was like, what the... What this? I mean...
When's
you know,
it going to finish?
It's good if you like the Beatles or the Ruttles. You know, the Ruttles, I wouldn't say it's shit. I thought in that era they didn't write any shit songs because Noel Gallagher could write really good tunes during that era. And also Liam Gallagher was a great singer. But he could write good songs, but... Yeah, I mean, they just became more and more of a parody. But I would say Wonderwall was, when it came out, that was a very good song. And they were everywhere at this time. And you couldn't kind of get away from Oasis.
I mean, Wonderwall never
anywhere.
Got a number
I mean,
one.
They were on every TV show and everything.
Yeah, Wonderwall never got a number one, but it was the one that made the leap from them being still slightly culty into them
they
being
were an indie
absolutely
band.
Massive household name,
Yeah, this was when like people started saying, oh, they're the new Beatles. And of course, they never became that big. But they looked like they could because it was like everyone, your mum and fucking everyone knew who they were, knew what the songs were. They were in every tabloid newspaper, every broadsheet newspaper, every radio and TV show.
I mean, when was the Nebworth gig that they did?
I think that was...
Two gigs they did.
Maybe that was 96.
I'm looking now. Was that 96 as well? 96. And it was something like 1 in 12 people in the country applied for tickets for it. It was so ridiculous.
I didn't apply, but only because I thought I probably wouldn't get there. But my mate went, and he said it was so intense and such a hot day. There was like, they were in the queue for the beer, and people were just passing out all over the place.
Jesus Christ.
I tell you what, film they made, someone made, about this era and how big Oasis got, if you're a younger listener, and you'll be aware that Oasis were big, but the sort of sense of which, especially if you were young, like I was a student, I was 20 years old, and it felt like you'd get up and go to shops and suddenly, like, and like, whether I was in London or in Brighton, they were just like, Oasis were like a shadow that hung over everything.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
People were dressing like them and, you know.
Well, that I mean, working in Elprice, you see that happening in real time because the people who come in, some of them regulars, you see them change and mutate from what they used to dress like, and then they suddenly become more and more Gallagher-esque, let's say, in the way they walk and they talk and all that sort of thing. They're like Kathy Burke on Harry Enfield.
Yeah.
Perry went to Manchester for the weekend.
I was like that. I put on... I grew my hair around that era. I had a full fucking Liam Gallagher haircut, although eventually it became more like the Supercross look because I grew massive fucking mutton chops. Huge ones, right? And you know, wear the anorak and all of that. Fucking wearing sunglasses indoors. I did that. It's embarrassing. I'm cringing about it.
Like you had a 50 pence piece jammed up your arsehole. All
no, I would say that despite all of those sort of things I fell into, I always maintained the Cockney strut. Because I think, you know, you can get into Oasis, you can worship the sort of Manchester look and the sound of their bands, but ultimately, the thing was, I had to turn up at West Ham every week, and the more kind of Britpopish my appearance became, the more pressure I came under. I was sitting in the rough person's seats, and I'd be at university. Me and my mate, we would drive back in his car every Saturday for the game, and we would come back on the train midweek for midweek games. And these seats we've been sitting in for years, and it was a rough bit of it. And I think there were certain quarters of the East End where, let's say, the Britpop movement never quite took hold in the way it did around the rest of the country.
Yeah, they weren't emotionally invested in it quite as much as you were.
There might have been scepticism in places like Canning Town about the cultural significance of the Gallagher brothers and all the rest of it. So, yeah, I mean, I would come up the steps and it got to a stage where it was like I was getting shouted at quite a lot. Like, you know, where the fuck is staying? You get a fucking haircut, you can't, and all this sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, but you did the right thing. You deviated away from Manchester and towards Supergrass, which were from Oxford, I think.
They were from Oxford. So, and in fact, Southern. He lived in Brighton, so he sometimes would be on the same train as me on the way home. Oh, hello, you're the man from Supergrass. Look, I've grown my sideburns like yours.
Just like you. And I've been shopping around to try and get a chopper bike. So I could be like you in the video.
You live in Brighton, just like I do. Perhaps I could be in your pop music band.
Yeah, there's a lot of cringy stuff from that era. Mm. But if I look at the charts beyond that song, there's so much other great music that had nothing to do with any of it.
Yeah, and I'm going to stop you there because we've run out of time and there's so much more in this chart we can get into. Mm. So we'll do it in the next episode.
There's a good dozen songs that are infinitely better than Wonderwall that we haven't got onto yet and have nothing to do with Britpop. Yeah,
definitely. All right, that's that from this one then, and we'll be back with more in the future, if indeed we have a future. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Tired
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.